Oh boy, Officer Friendly is coming. Hi.
You're back and you have a better phone this time.
I know, it's a miracle. I still got the other one.
Oh, the flip phone?
Yeah, and then I'm going to film what I recorded onto that, but I don't know. You don't need to be up there on the internet, do you? Do you want to be a...
Not particular.
Okay.
No, I just wanted to say hi.
Hi. Yeah, that was pleasant. I put the audio up.
Okay.
It's Indie Bay. It's called the Mouse Report. I'm DJ Mouse.
DJ Mouse?
Yeah, I go every That's Tuesday cool. and I tell Berkeley Liberation Radio on them.
That's cool.
So your voice is there.
Oh.
And I've got the MP driving by. So people.
Yeah, they just want to check it out. I already told them that you're one of our friends.
Regular. Oh, thank you. Oh, that's so sweet. I won't tell anybody you said that.
Yeah, don't tell your.
You'll
friends.
Get in trouble. Yeah, believe me, you'll get in trouble. You. Scare them away. We don't like them. Us mean.
Yeah. All right.
That's our idea.
Did you put up posters this time or no?
Well, see, the one that I had put up was all the. So I really don't. I'm going to take the other one down. Have you helped kill children in Yemen with white phosphorus today? You remember, have you hugged your kid today?
Yeah.
So that's from the old, have you killed kids in El Salvador today?
Oh.
My little cutesy from the horrible 80s. Let me turn this off so I don't accidentally. Oh my God, it's still here. 2 weeks later or something.
Oh yeah, so... For the last 2 weeks, you could go by the weapons station railroad crossing where my friend Brian Wilson lost his legs to the weapons train, and it says no WMD with a mushroom cloud zero with a WMD inside, and then it said no steel frame building falls in fire, no Afghan did it, idiots. So that's what you see on the screen. It doesn't translate to radio, so. Also on the screen, you see the Tyrannosaurus saying, we dropped the biggest WMD on Afghanistan since Nagasaki's on our allies in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a question mark, exclamation point. What kind of prehistoric monsters are we, asked the Tyrannosaurus Rex.
To Fitzgerald, Port Chicago Highway. Military Ocean Terminal Concord.
Now, on the subject of fighting for Al-Qaeda, on the side of Al-Qaeda in Syria and Libya, or we're in Yemen, rather. I mean, we dropped the phosphorus in Libya, too, but we're doing it now on the Yemenis. But back to Syria. Assyrians in Iraq were not allowed to defend their own lands against ISIS, says Syrian girl partisan. In July of 2014, Kurdish military force, the Peshmerga, issued an order that required all inhabitants of the Nineveh Plains to turn over their weapons. Here's the order. Those who have in their possessions heavy or medium weapons or ammunition are to turn them over to the security team, regards the director of the security team, Muhammad Dwayne. Peshmerga went door to door and seized all weapons owned by Syrians, Yazidis, and other minorities. I was a resident there. They confiscated every single bullet from us. Before they pulled out their heavy weapons, they systematically did deliver Christians and Yazidis down to IS. KRG claimed they were responsible for the security of the Nineveh Plains. And the minorities were reassured that the Peshmerga would protect them. Right, apartheid auxiliary. Now, if you're going to participate in any apartheid auxiliary that has support of the West, fuck you! And the horse you came in on, but not the horse, maybe. Just take that back. I'm sorry, horses. I apologize, but never mind. Protect them against any attacks. Those who didn't comply were threatened with severe punishment. 18-year-old Sipya Kado, a Syrian from Al-Qush, is there. They said, we'll let Erbil fall before we let them take the Nineveh Plains. The Peshmerga said, you Assyrians are dear to us. 2 weeks later, when ISIS attacked, the Peshmerga retreated. They did not give them gun back. Abandoning the Syrians and other minorities to genocide.
The
Peshmerga didn't tell anyone ISIS was coming. They didn't fire a single bullet. They left it. They got in their cars and just left. A Yazidi girl speaks out after being abandoned by the Peshmerga. The Peshmerga of Barzani fled. Barzani is the apartheid auxiliary. They have let us down. We didn't even have time to put our shoes because we had to... The minorities had no choice but to flee. 200,000 Assyrians fled their homes and have yet to return.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions is on again. Apparently, he was originally going to testify before the Senate on Tuesday. He canceled it, and now it has been rescheduled after receiving much criticism. This, of course, is on the heels of the much-touted testimony of the fired FBI Director James Comey, who has called President Trump a liar. Liar, liar, pants on fire. Seems to be lots of name-calling going around. Joining us to help understand that and more is Daniel Lazar. He has written a recent article entitled "The Scandal Hidden Behind Russiagate." Daniel, welcome to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
Glad to be here.
Well, I think where I want to start is with James Comey, fired FBI director, and his testimony last week. Just sort of unpack that for us and tell us what should we have looked for? What did we maybe miss?
Well, I don't know. The Democrats are hoping that that Comey would really level Trump. You know, come across something really so devastating that Trump would sort of just kind of wither and die right before the public's eyes. But it didn't happen. And actually I thought his testimony was rather weak. Pulling Comey aside and saying, "Hey, Mike Flynn's a good guy, go easy on him," doesn't strike me as obstruction of justice. It strikes me as a perfectly ordinary exchange. And I think that, you know, any hope that this would somehow nail Trump is just not gonna happen. And Trump did tell Comey to pursue the investigation. He asked for his loyalty, but gosh, God even knows what that even means. So it's much ado about nothing.
Well, you know, he also said that it's unequivocal that the Russians hacked U.S. elections. I know that you've written extensively about this. Tell us, what's your view of his assertion that it is unequivocally so?
It's unequivocally so. There simply is no proof. There's some evidence, you know, but that it hardly rises to the level of proof. I mean, Clapper, the former director of national intelligence, who signed this January 6th report, asserting high confidence that the hack occurred. Bear in mind, this guy was a proponent of the theory that that Saddam Hussein had WMDs. This is back 16 years ago, 15 years ago. And when those WMDs never turned up, weapons of mass destruction, Clappers argued that they had been secretly, ferried out of the country to Syria. So this is a man whose ties to reality are not the very strongest. And essentially, as Comey admitted in his testimony, the FBI never independently examined the DNC's computer servers. They rely entirely on the judgment of a private firm known as CrowdStrike that the Democratic National Committee hired. And CrowdStrike, there are many reasons to suspect CrowdStrike's objectivity and neutrality and competence. The FBI to rely on a private firm's finding for this whole case, and then just to say it's unequivocal, is to me shocking.
And that's the voice of Daniel Lazar. We're talking about the evidence that Comey said was unequivocal that the Russians had indeed hacked the last U.S. elections, presidential elections. Well, you know, you're making an extraordinary rebuttal, because it seems as if the mainstream media have fallen all over themselves to pick that up. It seems like they're saying it's a fait accompli, and you're saying that that indeed is not the truth. What are they citing as evidence? I know CrowdStrike, but what could he be clinging to make such a strong statement?
Well, CrowdStrike found evidence of a certain kind of computer virus that had been used to invade the DNC, which they then asserted was tied to Russia. Now, the computer virus is known by various names. It may be tied to Russia. It may be tied to Ukraine. It may be tied to others. We just don't know. The evidence is not as strong as Comey says. And CrowdStrike, its chief technical officer is a man named Dmitry Alperovich, who has a history, at least on one former occasion, has made a false claim of Russian cyber penetration. And then just this past December argued that Russian-backed Ukrainian separatists were using the same software known as APT-28 to penetrate Ukrainian national artillery units and zero in on their guns so they could destroy them more effectively. That turned out to be false. So CrowdStrike's record is not very good. Alperovich is on the record as being fiercely anti-Putin. He's tied to a Washington think tank called the Atlantic Council. He's a member of their faculty, whatever you call them. And his anti-Putin feelings are well known, and his track record is less than 100%. So all evidence, the whole claim that the DNC was hacked by the Russians rests on Dmitry Alperovich, who is just not that good a source, and there is plenty of room for doubt. And bear in mind that WikiLeaks denies it. WikiLeaks said it's not a hack, it was a leak by an internal dissenter. And WikiLeaks' record for honesty is 100%, because WikiLeaks has to be honest in what it reports, otherwise its credibility will be shot. So WikiLeaks, with its 100% record of accuracy, says this was not a hack, but was a leak. And there's plenty of reason to doubt Alperovich's CrowdStrike's findings. And as Comey admitted, the FBI has never independently examined the DNC's computer servers.
Well, how in the heck can you make a statement like that then? That, you know, he said without a shadow of a doubt, the Russians did this. I don't.
Because everybody wants to believe it.
Okay.
Everybody wants to think it's true. Because if they believe it's true, then they can somehow toss out Trump, get Pence in there, and a more traditional foreign policy will be followed, one based on increasing hostility to Russia. That's what this whole thing is about. This is a foreign policy war being fought by other means.
So you're saying that in fact this is a struggle by two elites over the shape and projection of U.S. foreign policy in the world.
Absolutely, 100%. I'm not a conspiracy monger. Believe me, I'm sort of kind of an anti-conspiracist. I believe in the simplest possible solution to any problem. But in this case, what we see here is a foreign policy dispute which is being played out in a highly indirect way over charges that Trump somehow colluded with the Republicans to steal, with the Russians to steal the White House. And just pause to think for a second what they're saying. I mean, if there was any truth to that report, that would be the most sensational story in the last century. I mean, Putin plants a Siberian candidate in the Oval Office. The White House has been captured by the Kremlin. I mean, this is sensational stuff. But simply, the evidence is just not persuasive.
Well, let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and that's the voice of our guest, Daniel Lazar. He's the author, most recently, of The Velvet Coup, The Constitution, The Supreme Court, and The Decline of American Democracy on Verso Books. He is an amazing journalist, and he is making an amazing assertion here, been doing it very consistently, which is that there is no real evidence that the Russians hacked the elections in the United States. Now of course, you're correct. WikiLeaks has consistently said, and Julian Assange have consistently said, that this is not a hack, that indeed this was an internal leak. And now, what was the big damage here that is said to have been done by this hack, you know, which we believe is a leak, which you believe is a leak, was in fact the Podesta memos, right? The ones that showed that the Democrats had colluded, the upper echelons of the Democratic Party had colluded to defeat Bernie Sanders and to preference Hillary Clinton. That's the real damaging information, right?
Yes.
And that's what they're saying led to a diminish. What's the point they're trying to make here? That because there was, and by the way, they never seem to discuss the merits of that. You know what the content was. They always want to discuss the source, right? But the real content that was supposed to be damaging was exactly that. And somehow that's supposed to have hurt Hillary Clinton's chances or lost her the election.
That plus fake, you know, emails, fake news, supposedly was enough to tilt people, against her.
No, but let's deal specifically with the information that they're saying damaged, you know, inconclusively damaged the elections and skewed them towards Trump. What is that information they're talking about?
That was the information, the infighting, the evidence of collusion. The nasty things that Hillary supporters said about Bernie Sanders, you know, you can't elect an atheist. Maybe I'll have some friendly reporter ask him if he's an atheist at some press conference. Other kinds of dirty tricks that were being discussed at the high levels of the DNC.
But Podesta never denied that he actually wrote those things. And the Democratic the leadership of the Democratic Party never denied that, in fact, they did collude to push Sanders aside.
Yes, they never denied it. I'll tell you what, the single most amazing email that came out of that leak. And by the way, I wouldn't quite say, put it so strongly, I wouldn't say that I know it's a leak. I tend to believe it's a leak. It's still possible it's a hack. It simply is unproven. And in the case, and any reasonable person would demand very strong proof before giving any credence to a story as sensational or outrageous as this one. But anyway, to get back to the point, the most sensational single email was an email that Hillary wrote to Podesta discussing the situation of the battle against ISIS, in which she admitted, this is an email that dates from mid-2014, that Qatar and Saudi Arabia are leading financial sponsors of ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Now, this is incredible news. No one jumped on it for obvious reasons. And even more amazing is that Hillary continued to take Saudi donations for her family foundation.
Well, here's the other part of this.
This is to me, this is real corruption. But anyway, go on.
No, I'm right with you. I'm following right with you. But I'm still incredulous about the point that nobody denied that this was the truth. And let's just say for a second, the Russians did do it.
Yeah.
Right? But isn't it the truth? And shouldn't the public have known anyway that in fact this was being done within the Democratic Party? I mean, myself as an independent, who wanted to think the best of the elections, this is very disheartening to find out. But I also felt like it was my right as a citizen to know that that was actually going on.
I totally agree. I totally agree. It certainly would temper my indignation.
So I guess my point is, I don't understand what the big deal is here, right? I mean, even the Russians did do it. They did democracy a favor in shining a light, giving sunshine to what the Democratic Party was doing and what they were really about.
Yes. I still don't think, I'm not entirely positive, but I still don't think the Russians did it.
Okay. Well, we're going to leave it there, but you get my point. I mean,
Of course.
I just don't understand what the big deal is here and how they can say that telling the truth damaged is tantamount to damaging U.S. elections, then there's a problem with the U.S. election process.
There is. there is a problem.
That's my logic. Does that seem logical to you?
110%. There's serious problems, but no one wants to face the problem. Look at Hillary won by 3 million votes. She lost by virtue of this 18th century artifact called the Electoral College. In 2001, Hillary called for the Electoral College to be fixed.
And then dropped it.
And he still hasn't raised it now. I mean, you know, it's like blaming everybody else for America's own problem.
Well, I just got to say, I am grateful for more information, no matter the source. I'm grateful for truthful information, no matter the source, not less and not more lies.
I got to thank you, Daniel. And then, right when it ended, right after it ended, there was this guy, Stephen M. Brown, who's connected with Pacifica, who sent out a mass email to the Pacifica supporters telling them that, in fact, we were lying, that there was no censorship, and that these forums had just been innocently left by the wayside because they can't host all their forums. And, of course, that was a blatant lie, and there were emails showing that your forum, Tony, had been canceled because you were being called a Holocaust denier by these wealthy Germans. he never even went and talked to anybody on our side to get our story. So now he's had to issue a pretty abject apology and retraction, admitting that he was lied to by the people from the left forum and that we were the ones that were telling the truth. We were censored. So I guess that's a small victory for truth.
Well, although my name was used specifically and mentioned in that very negative light, nobody to this day at the Left Forum has talked to me.
So the story here is Josh Goldberg posts on Tony's Facebook page, Canadian professor, this evil shit that he is then blamed for. It's blamed the victim, of course. So the issue here is the Left Forum and the PNAC Northwood stand down, the WTC demolitions after the drone strikes, after the air defense stand down, that obviously has nothing to do with any foreigners. Well, the left is going to turn deliberately blind Manhattan eyes and deaf ears to those series of explosions that were repeatedly told to Democracy Now's Amy Goodman and, frankly, Dennis Bernstein, who says he used to want to be a cloaked dagger. But anyway, stop now. I'm going to jump back to the black box voter hack that
game saved again.
Okay, in 10 so minutes, I think
thanks to the mob
I could repeat.
El águila clase vuela y te copia los lentes abriendo salaceros, deja tu cuela en el viento. El águila se da luego. Y le cubija el silencio. Correle, que te van a matar. Correle.
That's terrible.
Where do you think better me? For Victor Hara. Actually, he sang it for Jay. Andale.
They constantly talked about how horrible Trump was. They even went farther than mainstream media talking about Trump, calling him a fat.
Y yo también, pero yo sé que
El odio es mi problema. Hatred is sickness. That's my problem. If I hate Trump, it's my problem. But this sick fart joke that wants to build a wall and deport nos mexicanos, pues, por supuesto, soy mexicano, pero estoy en México aquí mismo porque no reconocemos esclavitud y genocidio, invasión criminales y la ley de derecho común también no. ¿Qué ha de decir derecho común de la invasión genocidio? In no case can a white citizen be convicted on the testimony of an Indian, California Indian Indentured Act of 1850. Now, I can't exactly say this in a Romance language because English can only be used and said by psychopaths. And you express psychotic things like indentured, meaning born without rights, only as a criminal act. So, después de la revolución, esta va a ser una zona de inglés prohibida. Y disculpa haber eso, pero también probable español porque es lengua colonial con todos estos mindforks, like 9/11 is a mind fork. One Pentagon drone plus one Pentagon drone equals 3 WTC demolitions.
Indian legend.
Fallen Angels reminds me that in the last episode of the Contra War in Central America, Nurse Dorothy was escorting the Contra to the hospital to protect him from reprisal from his countrymen so he could get a bullet out of his head, and then he would go back and tell his buddies, "You can't kill her, she's the only one taking care of our family." So, anyway, as we're mopping up our 40,000 headmen, or not we, the Syrians are mopping up your gringo y gringa, your Death Squad, Arab Sting, Scarab Sting of the Arab Spring. Don't forget.
You're the only white man in the room.
Don't call me white.
Hey, baby, I just got back from town. Yeah, the bribes are paid. I need to turn my heart down. They say the deal's already made. While it all comes down, and the buzzards and the hawks and the judges and the mob circle round. No fire with the queen and all the world. I would go in chains just to see you free. Ropes that bind you and the role you play and the pride that hooks you while the big ones get away. Love junkies wanna change the world, quickly stays the same. Money junkies fire all the smart ones. Power junkies run the game, one step at a time. Polarity hill. If the bad guys don't get too big, then the good guys will. With angels on the tape in the yard. Hey, don't the wars come easy? Hey, don't the peace come hard? If I had a way to reach the sky, I'd grab that crescent moon, wield it like a knife, save you from the lies. Ropes that bind you and the role you play and the game that hooks you while the big ones get away.
Blocked the murder investigation from going forward. And there's a picture of Mr. and Mrs. Bill. But I want to go back to the Flash Boys interview on read from the article in the consortium. Special Prosecutor Archibald Cox ran into a buzzsaw in October 73. After months of gumshoe fieldwork, he had begun zeroing in on evidence linking the plumbers with the Oval Office. This was a bridge too far from Nixon's point of view, so we ordered him canned. Cox was thus operating in the realm of hard, cold, tangible fact. Of course, from the June 23rd, 1972 smoking gun tape, he's telling John Dean, listen, go tell the FBI it'll blow the Bay of Pigs thing and make them and the CIA look bad. Now, why is Nixon worried about the Bay of Pigs thing is because, Haldeman explains in The Ends of Power, they're talking about their murder of our president, 1963. Remember, our brain's landing on the back of the vehicle, and a half a century later, Big Brother is trying to shove down our throat the patsy, saying that First Lady recovered the brains from the back of the vehicle after driving past Oswald. Okay, so right now, in one fell swoop, they tell you a 5-year-old knows that he didn't shoot, or they would have gone in the other direction. A 5-year-old knows that they're saying Oswald killed him after he drove past, and then the brains jumped out of the head from the side Oswald was on to land on the back of the car. Well, anyway, that's what was going on under Nixon, because they were trying to get those pictures from Dallas, because LBJ, the vice president, blew our brains out along with the other two vice presidents, Nixon and son of Hitler's banker. Because you get a mix up with the grandson of Hitler's banker. In both cases, they blow our brains out and they stick these people in the master's role. And this is what the Second Amendment and all that right-wing shit is for. Of course, the Second Amendment talks about a free state, but they don't define that they're talking about a slave state, okay? They say, forget everything we just said, do what we say, or you're dead. Never mind, that was Watergate. No, second-rate bullshit are said by the people that blew our brains out and wanted to drive the getaway car, or their media. And I'm not going to say hoes because I have too much respect for working. No burglars have been apprehended. No links have been clearly established. But Russiagate is different, since the alleged crime that is at the heart of the scandal, last summer's reported break-in at the DNC, is so far based on pure speculation. No burglars have been apprehended. No links have been clearly established with the reputed masterminds in Moscow, while WikiLeaks continues to insist that the email disclosure was not a hack by outside intelligence operatives at all, but by a leak by a disgusted insider. And as soon as Seth Rich was killed, Julian Assange went on to say, you know, not in so many words, but obviously, okay, this is, and he should have said, listen, there is an exception to our anonymity rule. If you are killed, you will be safe from disclosure, and then we will acknowledge that you were our source so that your killers can be prosecuted. You have to provide the cui bono to the people with carrying the guns around, as sad as it is, because you can't pick a gun up without being party to the crime. What if he goes for his? You're going to have to silence the evidence. You're going to have to destroy the evidence. So you're just so stupid. I just can't go on. It's just too much. Julian, what do you say?
And it's not the case that social media is just going to stay there. As it has been used in this election and the U.S. election. That's absolutely not true.
back to Julian, because remember he said this death of the 27-year-old just now proves what danger we're facing. So he fully acknowledged that Seth Rich was the source. And you can say he didn't, if you want to say he was pretending he was keeping the anonymity. But no, this is the exception that proves the rule. You know, we will not maintain anonymity if it interferes with prosecuting your killers. If you're giving us information, we will prosecute your killer by talking about who probably killed you, because who was standing to benefit? It's always the first question, cui bono.
And it's possible we'll end up in a much worse position. So, okay, you've got, you know, five big media barons here and trusts and the BBC. Okay, but what if we basically just have Facebook and Twitter? If it kind of evolves that, maybe Facebook, Twitter, and the BBC. Are we in a better position? No, we're potentially in a much worse position. What hasn't happened yet is Facebook and Twitter taking seriously how they can control and influence the other power structures that want them to control and influence.
Exacto. For example, as soon as they said, well, we're doubling our staff to screen, then I got Nazi punks screened out because I posted Jello's Nazi punks fuck off. But somehow Zucker Schmuckface does not want Nazi punks exposed. So if you're not going to expose Nazi punks, then when my friend says Nazi punks fuck off, I get an email, you know. She's saying fuck off. Oh, what trauma. This should be interesting. But no. I can see she said Nazi punks fuck off when it was posted, but then the email, you know, like Facebook will send your Gmail, your Google account, a little email of what she said, okay, only they're going to edit out Nazi punks, so you're just fuck off. Well, anyway, that's just a little funny anecdote.
They've just started to do it, but we're going to move to a time when the various forms of artificial intelligence that have been developed at Google and been acquired by Facebook and a bit in China are going to be used to control or adjust perception. So if you imagine a Daily Mail not run by Paul Dacry, but run by purely or essentially by artificial intelligence, What does that look like when there's only the Daily Mail worldwide? So that's what Facebook and Twitter, I believe, will shift into. They must inevitably shift into that. There's already such intense pressures that Google and Facebook came out publicly and said that they were changing how they were behaving directly to deal with the French election, essentially directly to make sure Macron won. And Le Pen didn't, because they were getting such pressure from their presumably their elite level connections, from their staff and so on, to make sure she didn't win.
Right, we have 2 minutes left. 1 minute left.
Can I just make one sentence, yes, literally? What is so important, I would like to connect what Julian was saying.
He just hit the most interesting bit. We're just talking about AI, and we're wrapping up. And
with your billionaire
really
friends, you know.
I know.
What game, what game they played. This is a game that many people play. I secretly know it, but I pretend not to know it. All the dirty things, Iraq war. And what WikiLeaks does is bring in the data. Sorry, fuck you, now you know it. You cannot, because many even of my friends say, secret services, army.
Because it's not really written by anyone, it's literally the documents in it.
That was Slavo Žižek and Mia from MIA. But back to that. Skipping on. Unmute.
It's not really written by anyone. It's literally the documents, and it gets dropped.
Yeah. And those empowered, they cannot pretend that it's not sure, we don't know it. Now,
Now we're at the Meltdown Festival, June 11th. Okay.
They know it.
Yeah, but is there a process of gatekeeping in what gets dropped and what doesn't? Because that's what the criticism of WikiLeaks is that there is a gatekeeping process.
That is true. There is. The process is it can't have been published before and it has to be an authentic document. That's the process.
And it's not an opinion. It's just the fact.
Well, we also write analysis, but the power, no one really cares about my analysis or WikiLeaks analysis. I mean, they really care about it, but people basically don't. What they care about, and what has serious scarcity value, is the raw information that we publish, because it's, and our reputation for accuracy. So these things combined produce an undeniable reality. So when used in arguments, for example, as Zizek was pointing out, you can point to it directly there. It's quite good. You publish so much that when an event arises like this current dispute between Turkey and Qatar, sorry, between Saudi and Qatar, Turkey is also now involved. We can go back and look at what we published in 2015 with the Saudi cables or more recent material with Hillary Clinton's emails or in the big cable sets we've published that reveal that this new dispute is not new. I mean, it emerges from all sorts of regional power conflicts from Saudi, from the internal tensions in Saudi Arabia, which have been dealt with by creating external enemies, from the use of Al Jazeera as a kind of a poor man's nuclear weapon, a poor man's deterrent by Qatar. Qatar's geographical positioning in relation to Saudi Arabia and so on. So it's, yeah. So I mean, the press speaks about WikiLeaks as if it's a scandal generator and that it exposes certain people and harms them. But the way I have always seen the value of what we do is that WikiLeaks is a rebel library of Alexandria, where every book in it is accurate. It doesn't mean every phrase on every page is accurate, because governments write inaccurate things, but nonetheless, the books themselves are accurate. And that's in a, as we have an informational cacophony, and everyone's able to give an opinion, what we need is some kind of firm scaffolding that you can rely on to build opinions and particular political movements and views. And that has to be some kind of library that you can trust about how the world actually works. That is something that exists independently of a particular political movement. It's something, in a way, that exists independently of the particular time that we're in, just as we can go back and look at very old books to understand afresh something about something about the time that we live in, because they were written prior to just this moment. So they were not written with an attempt to manipulate us in our understanding at precisely this moment. They're written about a slightly earlier a very ancient situation, or in the case of WikiLeaks, something that's a few weeks or a few years old.
I wanted to ask about AI again, just because we're running over anyway. So musicians who are sort of encouraged to obviously embrace AR technology and VR technology and AI technology, and it's being sold to us as something that is amazing, to become a hologram or have a 3D experience where, you know, you don't have to go out and do tours and people could put headsets on and you'd be there in the room. Does that mean that in the future we're going to be more vulnerable to more sort of becoming apolitical. Is that a word? Like, not basically not having any sort of malfunctioning human traits, so we could be easily squashed into a...
Well, you're asking, do new technologies that interface with our perceptions,
is it going to be connected
recordings, movies and so on, can we be influenced by these more than we could previously? Yes, of course we can. But I don't see that is the big problem for us as human beings. Human beings have always been influenced by sophisticated systems of production of information and experience. So, BBC, for example. You kind of look at it and you think it was actually not that sophisticated, but when you think about the whole machine and all the parts coming together, it's very sophisticated means of influencing the thoughts of human beings.
Next tape, this Polly White singer talking about what it's like to be thrown off your ancestral land.
I was born here, my relatives were born here.
Please, actions, the Ad eda ki ka aapo chachin ka ta se ta liya ko Etten to ta chon inita O ta se de ya Ta se ji se go pa ni chukhoi Ti vaha ebe sha ni chukhoi Chachin ke hat ito li ki etten Ho e aate Ni ki je be ka si ta nash khat Adoho want Avi Rahnal Melonasa Jinnisa do Tropata to see. Ado eya at Adoshi Dalta Evahana Chakra. Ahode put ego Nasa Jinnahante. Kodo eta honil ego. Kayagi do Huevosundo. Do Hayat eta Danitlin. On the kill just into the other with a cookies on it or in need that is on it will yahaki. Hare she the night hell skin sat at a net on leg with your a at a knee. So never hot sat at yon time, Nisco. The stand on lingo. The season lingo. The set at on lingo. I sit up as kehui inni. Tite opeta nil etanisis. Etesis ani ta niinku ennassas. Neta non hit hahmatja. Ei antaisvel. En enat ani itäisvel. Enki et oottopet altookka. Penneti taas paha ataat osin jaat.
I would like to also express that the Hopi tribe is telling the whole world on the media press that it is only a handful of people which they're missing be threatened with relocation, but then as for an elder under that category, I'm an elder, and I'm a grandparent, and I'm a mother, and so forth. So we have our children that are not being counted as being under under the same category as I am, because I have children, grandchildren, and we have future generations. So these people are not counted, and they end up landless if we, the elders, are relocated, and all our family, extended family, are going to be landless, and this is why we feel that we need to be here for the survival of the Navajo people. And we want to also mention that there's educated people that are our relatives, you know, on the Hopi side, which are pushing for the relocation of the Métis people, and we feel that they are disseminating false information towards the people that are being affected here at Big Mountain, and we want to bring across that the real traditional Hopis do not intend for the relocation of the neighbors, and that why are all these assimilated Hopi tribal councils trying to do away with our human rights as to being descendants of Latin nations.